Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for coming. I'm really excited to be here. My name is John Hazen. I'm a part of the team up at Microsoft that has been investing in really what we think of as some brilliant new investments in the WebView control. And even though the keynote speakers have been trying to steal my thunder, I guarantee that I have some new thunder to share with you in this meeting that you have not seen yet. So I'm really excited about it, particularly on behalf of the folks back up in Redmond. So really, standard agenda slide. The only thing I really wanted to point out about this slide is I am going to swear that that's a picture of me when I had more hair and wore cool glasses. The rest is obvious. We're here to talk about the web and Windows and see some demos and some cool code. So we'll just keep moving along. All right. You have heard us talk many, many times about the importance of standards and a renewed commitment that we've had over the last several years in the browser to HTML5 and supporting common web standards. And I want to assure you that that's not something that we believe in just to have a checkbox on some competitive scorecard, and it's not something that we think is right just for the browser. It's something that we think is important as it is coupled with the power of Windows for you to enable the rest of the power and the capabilities of the web to infuse the Windows platform. And yes, in case you're wondering, I did make that animation all by myself, so I'm pretty proud of it. Did you like it? Is it cool? Come on. Yes? Okay. All right, you are there. That's great. And so whether you're talking about services that you want to include in your application, sites that you want to display, JavaScript libraries that you want to use, all of these things are really enabled and made most easy for you if we support the standards. And so we're really committed to that in a deep way. We have a continuum of support, from our point of view, for these web standards throughout the platform, whether we're talking about Internet Explorer behaving more like an application and participating in the start menu with things like live tiles or notifications or being smarter about how it interacts with contracts on the system. Certainly, we're continuing our commitment to allowing you to develop full-blown store applications written simply in HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. But what we're going to focus on today is really about integrating websites into your applications regardless of the language that you're using. So people want to integrate the web in a variety of different ways in their application. And when we look at the things in the store, it really ranges from some very simple things like, I've got an application, there's some content I want to display, I just want to render a web page. And that's a very natural way for you to use the WebView control. Other apps want to incorporate really just one element of some web service, say a commerce engine, into their application in a way that really is seamless with the local app. Finally, we see some folks who really want to provide a native experience on our platform for what is essentially a cloud-based service. And I'm going to walk you through the ways in which the new WebView control that we're introducing in Windows 8.1 really helps you accomplish those goals in a way that's much easier than it was on Windows 8 with the basic WebView control that we provided there. So I want to review the mechanisms that we had in Windows 8 to display web content. First, if you're a HTML developer and just writing standard web-based applications, you're certainly familiar with iframes. And really, that was the only mechanism that you had to display a web page in your application. The challenge is iframes don't always work really well. There's a number of websites out there, major properties, that in fact actively prevent display of their site in an iframe. And so this leads to a perverse situation where, in fact, it's almost impossible in some cases to write an application using web technologies and then actually display a web page in that application. And so we felt that that was something that really needed to be addressed. For XAML developers, the story was slightly different. We had a very basic WebView control that we shipped in Windows 8 that certainly allowed you to render basic web pages, but it also had some limitations. For those of you who have used this control, the most common thing that we heard from you was that it wasn't fully integrated into the display tree. Essentially, what would happen with a WebView in Windows 8 is it was a separate window that was actually positioned floating on top of the rest of your application, so that when other UI elements like the app bar or flyouts would appear, unless you did special work, they would show up underneath the web view. And so that was a very frustrating thing for a number of developers. So both of these mechanisms had limitations. And so we thought about, well, how could we really solve this in a comprehensive way, not only for XAML developers, but for HTML developers as well? And as you've seen in some of the keynotes, we've introduced this new WebView control, and it is available both to XAML developers and HTML developers. And I will show you what that markup looks like in a few minutes. So this is a quick run-through of the key improvements that we've made in the WebView control, and then I'm going to dive into some deeper demos. So first and foremost, we've incorporated the WebView control into the display tree, and that's true whether you're in XAML or in HTML. It's really just part of the markup and behaves like any of the other controls in the system, so you can apply styling and just expect it to work, and I'll show you some cool demos of that. Secondly, we heard from you guys that the WebView control was really somewhat of a black box. When you decided to render a website in the WebView control, it either succeeded or failed and would tell you after the fact what had happened. And really, you told us that you needed greater insight into what was happening during the loading of content within that control so that you could take action on it based on different events that you could follow in the control itself. So we've introduced a complete set of navigation events and methods, and I'm going to walk through those with you in just a minute. Finally, we're still only halfway through this list. navigation to local content. What I mean by this is every Windows Store application has its local state directory where it's allowed to store content. And it turns out that many of you wanted to download new content to that location and then display it in a WebView control. And it turns out the WebView control that we shipped in Windows 8 doesn't support that. It would support HTTP addresses, which could go get content from the web, and it would support MS AppX web content, which is from your package, but it would not display content that was simply residing on the local drive. And so we introduced in 8.1 new mechanisms that allow you to navigate to that local content. And there's really a very basic form of that, and there's an advanced form of that. I'm going to hold off telling you about the advanced form of that until my last demo, because that's part of my new thunder, and I'll leave you on the edge of your seats waiting for that. Okay. Another thing that we began to be concerned about as we saw more and more applications being used to render web content was, again, the threats of phishing sites. And so IE in the browser helps protect users from malicious sites by warning them that there is potentially malicious content on a given site and throwing up a dialogue that says, hey, careful, proceed with caution. There may be a problem with this site. And as we saw people moving over to doing more of their browsing and applications, we became concerned that they were not being protected in that context. And so for the first time ever, we're introducing really the world-class mechanisms that we've got in Smart Screen for watching out for these kinds of dangerous behaviors into applications that you can write. And so I'm going to show you not only the default experience for Smart Screen as it's exposed in the WebView control, but how you can also respond to events where we notify you that content is perhaps potentially malicious so that you're in control. And finally, as has been revealed already, this control is available to both XAML and HTML developers. Okay, so I promised to talk about the navigation events in more detail. Basically, there are four events. Hey, navigation is starting. I haven't actually done any navigation yet, but if you want to take any action on that, prevent that navigation or redirect that navigation to another location, you can capture that event and take action on it. We're going to let you know when the content has started loading. We're going to let you know when the DOM is ready, and we're going to let you know when the complete control has been populated. And these navigation events that you can register for are not only available on the top level document, but they're also available to be registered for any of the iframes that are in that WebView control. So rather than being a black box, you can really see at every level of detail in the WebView control what's happening and respond to those events as you need. There's a couple of new content events that we're introducing as well. One is unviewable content. What do I mean by that? Well, it's our point of view that the WebView control is not a general purpose viewer for all file types. It's a specialized control that's for HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. So, of course, your users may navigate to things like a PDF file. What happens in that case? Well, in the browser, you would get a notification to download that PDF or save it locally. In the WebView control, what you will get as a developer is an event that says, hey, I've encountered something that I don't recognize. You can respond to that event and take action on that event in your application. For example, if it was a PDF that was being displayed, you could then download that PDF yourself in your application and use the new WinRT PDF rendering APIs to display that in your application yourself. I'll show you how that works in one of my later demos. And then this potentially unsafe content event is the event that you get when we throw the smart screen notification dialog on the screen. You can respond to that as well and take action. Finally, we heard from you that it was really important that you understood how these WebView controls were impacting the performance of your application and the responsiveness of your application, and you wanted insight into how well JavaScript was executing within that WebView. And so what we're introducing is a script executing event that will report to you every 500 milliseconds whether script is continuing to execute. And if you decide after 500 milliseconds or 2 seconds or 3 seconds, however long you decide is appropriate in your application for that script to complete, you could cancel that event and stop that script from executing within the WebView. Part of this is based on our desire to give you more direct control over what's happening in these web views without having to use the invoke script API. This is the mechanism that we provided in Windows 8 to allow you to inject content, whether it's script content, into some other web page, into the web view itself. And you could also register for script notify events to communicate back out. And we looked at all of the most common reasons why people were using invoke script and script notify, and we tried to bake those into the WebView control itself so that you were not having to use this potentially fragile mechanism of injecting your code into someone else's web page, which sometimes worked great and sometimes really was quite unstable. So there's a few methods that we're introducing in Windows 8.1 as well that we think will be beneficial to you and also reduce the need to use invoke script and script notify. Obviously, the standard navigation events need to be there. Navigate, of course, was there before, as well as stop and refresh. And we've got now the ability to test whether you can go forward in the navigation stack or can go backward in the navigation stack, and issue those commands as well. So you could introduce forward and back buttons in your WebView mechanism relatively straightforward without having to use invoke script. We also heard that you wanted the ability to capture screenshots. And so I've got a WebView displaying on the page. I know that I just want to grab that image and use it in my application in another way. We're giving you a very simple API that you can call to grab that screenshot at any time. Similarly, many of you want to capture what users have selected within a web view. Again, this was something that was impossible to do unless you injected your own script into the web view control, into someone else's web page, which we don't think should be necessary. So in Windows 8.1, with the new web view control, if users have selected content, you will be able to call an API directly that simply returns that content to you. So let me talk about invoke script and script notify for a moment. You will notice one small change here. It's now, instead of invoke script, it's invoke script async. This is really just a very minor move that we made to make it more consistent with the asynchronous nature of the rest of the WinRT platform. It really works exactly the same way as it did before, except now that it's async, so you can set promises on it and do all kinds of cool things. There's another thing that I want to talk about, and it's related to this notion that we're trying to reduce the need for you to use InvokeScript and Script Notify in your applications. And this gets back to something that I'm sure that none of you have done, but we have observed in other store applications. Sometimes not only can those mechanisms be destabilizing to your application and to a web page, they can actually introduce vulnerabilities in the platform that could be exploited by these remote web pages that you may be displaying in the WebView control. So if, for instance, your application responds to the Script Notify message and you allow any arbitrary website to send you Script Notify messages, there is a potential there for someone who is trying to do something harmful to cause your application to behave in ways that you had not anticipated. And so we've developed this point of view based on what we've observed in the current Windows Store applications, that there really is application code that's really under your direct control as developers, and there's remote code that really behaves as if it is part of your application. It's part and parcel. It's integrated into your app. And then there's this third category of stuff that really is arbitrary web content. It's not under your direct control. And we want to allow you to bind together remote content very tightly that's directly related to your application. And we want to put more barriers between your application content that you know and trust and arbitrary web content that is just some web page out there in the rest of the world. So we want to talk about the ways in which we are trying to protect your app and customer data, and we need your partnership in doing this. First of all, as we mentioned, we've got Smart Screen. Smart Screen is not a panacea for every kind of threat that there may be in a WebView control. It's simply a warning to users that this site may be trying to steal their information in some way, shape, or form. It's a phishing filter, if you will. That communication between remote content and your application code really needs to be intentional, and it needs to be trustworthy. And there's a couple of changes that we're making that help you ensure that that communication is, in fact, intentional and trustworthy. This is some new requirements that we're placing both on iframe communication and on WebView communication between your application and this remote arbitrary content. Not content that's under your direct control, but arbitrary content. For you to use iframes in your application, if you're using HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, if these locations are remote locations, they're going to need to be pre-declared in your manifest as part of what we call the app content URI list. It's something in Visual Studio where you can just add these URI entries into your manifest, and then these communication mechanisms will be allowed. So iframes can be enabled only if they're listed in the app content URI list in the AppX manifest. That also means that you can only have post-message communication between iframes and your parent application if it's included in that manifest and if it's over SSL. So that's a second requirement. It needs to be intentional, declared in the manifest, and it needs to be trustworthy. It needs to be over SSL. Similarly, for the WebView, while the WebView does support HTTP locations, if you want to use Script Notify, which is the mechanism by which this arbitrary content might be sending random messages to your application, that also needs to be intentional and it needs to be trustworthy. And so similar to the new requirements for iframes, the WebView control, if and only if you want to use Script Notify, it is also going to have to be pre-declared in the manifest, and it's going to have to be over SSL. Again, if this remote content really is part of your application, we want to allow those to be tightly bound. So as long as you are declaring them in their manifest and running them over SSL, then they will have no restrictions on their ability to communicate with one another. So let's dive into some demos. What I have here is a Windows Store application written in HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, and I am showing an iframe side by side with a web view control. And you might be looking at that and going, wow, those look exactly the same, John. And I would say, yes, exactly. They are supposed to look exactly the same. The web view control should be a very adequate substitute for iframes, even if you're using HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. So we want them to look exactly the same and in many ways behave exactly the same. So I can pan the iframe and I can, you know, scroll the web view, and that's cool. And it's great that they look the same. But there's also some subtle differences here that may not be immediately apparent. So for instance, I'm trying to zoom on this because that text is kind of small and I can't quite read it. And guess what? Pinch to zoom just doesn't work in the iframe. Now I could inject some CSS in here and make that work, but I'd really like that to work just by default. Well, it turns out that in the WebView control, that experience is that simple. Here's another thing that I would like to point out. This website has a phone number in it, and you may have seen in some of the recent IE demos that IE now has phone number detection in it allow you to click to open up a contact card. That is also a behavior that you could get in an iframe if you injected some other markup into it, but it is there by default in a web view. So I can zoom in here, show you that phone number, and just click on it, and I get the contact card. Again, this is just for free for you for using the WebView control. Finally, I explained to you earlier about some of the inadequacies of iframes, and that becomes apparent on many sites when they have some site-specific search experience on their page, and so they've integrated with some search engine. And so here I've got a search control on this page. So let me go ahead and search for WebView. Oops, if I could spell it correctly, it would help. I search for WebView and hit go, and wait for it. Nothing continues to happen. And nothing is ever going to happen here, and that's because this particular search provider doesn't support displaying their content within an iframe. And so you may have included a website in your application and displayed it in an iframe, and it appeared to work on the surface, but in fact, when you begin, your users begin to drill into the experience, they may stumble across things like this where it begins to break down and not work the way you would expect or the way they would expect. Now, if I go to the same search mechanism in the WebView control, you'll see that, boom, it in fact works. Now you notice I'm bringing up Google here. I'm really not picking on Google. They've got a great search engine. We happen to think Bing's better, but you will find that Google is in fact used very broadly across many sites on the internet, so I wanted to show this as an example of why the WebView is better even with our competitors' products. Secondly, we talked about how the web view is incorporated into the visual tree. And this example is designed to show you just how deeply and how well it's incorporated. But before I get into the visual aspects of this, I want to highlight there on the side of the screen there, I'm showing you the events as they occurred in my application. How they got fired. So I fired the navigation starting event, and there's the URL I'm going to. I haven't actually begun navigation there, but it started. And then the content was loading, the DOM got loaded, and it finished loading. Now I have another method that I'm firing as soon as I hit that navigation completed event, which is to call that screenshot API, which is the capture preview to blob async call. That's occurring immediately upon completion of the loading of this page. And that's the screenshot capture that you see at the bottom of the screen. Again, since none of the elements had animated into the page yet, that screenshot capture doesn't match what you actually visually see on the screen. But if I click the Get Image button, you'll see that it immediately shows up with a new version of that preview. And as I interact with this web view, if I continue to hit the Get Image API, it would begin to take snapshots at any point as I interacted with it. And so, again, I began to touch this, this control and show that it's fully interactive. I can show you a div overlay where, yes, this div is really on top of the WebView control, but the WebView is still fully operational and interactive behind this overlay. And since in the markup, it's simply just another element tag in the default HTML page, I can apply CSS to this as well. So I can do really cool things like rotate it. And it's just going to keep rotating as long as we want to watch it. And I kind of get addicted to watching it, particularly. Thank you. Particularly because I can continue to interact with this thing even while it's spinning and doing its whole thing, and I could continue to take new screenshots if I wanted to. And so we've really done a lot of work and worked a lot of long hours to make sure that this just works seamlessly and smoothly for you and your application without you having to do a lot of extra work to get these kinds of experiences. Let me go ahead and navigate this to Wikipedia and show you some other cool things. And since I don't want to make you all dizzy, let's stop that rotation. Okay, so what I've brought up here is the Windows page in a mobile format, which often works better if you're incorporating it in a smaller frame within your application. And this is going to allow me to, you know, browse around Wikipedia, if I can click on the links, you know, wherever I want to, and it's going to stay in my WebView control. But if I pop back to the Windows control and do something like, let me go to one of the external links. If I click on, say, the developer network, okay, well, it did exactly what I told it to. I asked it to navigate to the developer network within my WebView control, and it in fact did that. But this experience is not really particularly good. My user is going to have to pan around and interact with this in a way that is really not very natural for this smaller window. And so there really ought to be a smarter way for me to handle this particular scenario, and it turns out that there is. Let me pop over to the code for this and first show you what the markup for this particular application looks like. This is the new tag, x-ms-webview. That looks like kind of a funny name, but really that's the industry standard way of designating an extension that's proprietary to a particular vendor, in this case Microsoft. The WebView control is not a standardized yet, and so we've issued this vendor-specific name. If and when it becomes a standard tag for HTML, we will certainly adopt that. And so I have this WebView control. This is that iframe that you saw that was navigated to my WebView control demo website. And then over in the JavaScript, when I click on the Wikipedia button, this is the code that I call. Go Wiki. Yay. And I navigate that WebView control to the Wikipedia page for Windows. So let me do something a little bit more intelligent here and add this event listener. Again, this is that MS WebView navigation starting event. This is the thing that gets fired as soon as the WebView is about to navigate but has not actually taken action yet. So I can think about what the right thing to do is as soon as I know that this control is navigating. So I'm going to call this function isWikipedia. What this function does is test to see whether the URI that I'm about to navigate to is still based in wikipedia.org. And if it's not, I'm going to do something different. I'm going to call the prevent default function, which causes that navigation event to be canceled. And then I'm actually going to call the system launcher URI and launch the default browser with that exact same URI that would have been navigated in the WebView. So I'm going to see this appear in IE in this case, but it would work with any of the default browsers on the system, including, you know, Chrome or Firefox or whatever your preferred browser is. Now, there's something else that I'm doing here that's very interesting as well. You may have seen this in some other talks, but let me highlight it here. Since I don't want my users to be jumping completely out of my application and losing the context of where they were at in browsing Wikipedia, I'm actually going to want to launch the browser side by side with my application. And Windows 8.1 gives you a way to do that in a way that is really intelligent and smart. In this particular case, I'm going to set an option that says, I would like my application to have a remaining view on the screen when IE shows up that is, in fact, the minimum amount of space that my application will, in fact, function in. So what this is going to cause my application to do is to come up in a very narrow strip on the side of the screen while the other side, in fact, displays the rest of the browser. So let me show you what that looks like. We'll restart the application, navigate back to Wikipedia, scroll down to one of these external links, and now when I click on the official site, it's going to snap over. And then, of course, I can just continue to browse from here, and it's going to continue to bring up these links in your default browser. But if I navigate to something else that is, in fact, still in Wikipedia, like click on Windows 8, that's going to navigate, again, within the web view. Again, so that's the power of some of these events and giving you greater control over what's happening with the content of your application and the content of the web view itself. So that's really awesome. Here I also, let me update that, that screenshot so it matches the screen. I'd mentioned to you the selection APIs. So here, if I selected this text and I say I wanted to copy that or share that to some other application, I could get that selection and it will show up here in my application again without my having to inject any code to get this content back out. I'm sorry? Oh, yeah. He's asking about, well, what if an image was selected? That would be displayed as well. It would be pulled out from that selection API. Let's take a look at that later, okay? Okay, finally, I had mentioned to you for this demo, the smart screen integration, and I wanted to show you what that looks like. So here, what I've navigated to is malvertising.info, as you can see in the navigation starting event. And what happens with smart screen is, and this is the same as in the browser, it will immediately navigate to that particular location, but asynchronously it will issue a call out to Microsoft Services to determine whether that's a known phishing site or not, or has been reported or is suspected of being a phishing site. And within milliseconds, we will get an answer back that says yes or no. If the answer is yes, this is a potentially unsafe site, we will immediately re-navigate your page to this warning. And users can interact with this warning simply by tapping or clicking on the screen, and it will give them the message that this content has been reported as unsafe. Since smart screen is not 100% foolproof, there are situations in which users may in fact want to continue, and it's a perfectly safe thing to do. The vast majority of the time, they really should hit close and go back to where they started. But in this case, if I hit continue anyway, I would go ahead and display this this purportedly malicious ad, but this is Microsoft owned. This is really not a malicious site. It's just marked that way in our systems. And so what I want to highlight here is this event that you get that I've highlighted in red, MS WebView unsafe content warning displaying. So you could respond to this event in your application as well and just decide, you know, I really don't want my users going to that location under any circumstances. So if I see that event, I could immediately navigate them away and they wouldn't even get the option through the smart screen UI to continue to go forward on this site. Now, you don't have a way to suppress the smart screen experience. So it's not possible in your application, thankfully, for you to bypass these protections that we have in place for our users. You wouldn't want that. There's no circumstance under which that's the right thing to do. And so we give you the mechanisms that allow you to give them an alternate experience, but not to allow them to automatically go to malicious content. Okay, so this is basics about the web view, illustrating some of those principles that I shared with you earlier in this talk. But what about a more realistic application than just a demo like that? So I have a friend who's gotten really excited about e-commerce, and he's just sure this is the way he's going to fund his retirement. He heard this e-commerce thing, and people will buy anything out on the web, right? And so he decided he really likes shiny boxes, and he decided he would sell shiny boxes on the web too. In case you can't tell, I'm making this story up, but it's a good story. So he's created all these kinds of different boxes, fuzzy boxes, candy cane boxes, brain boxes. You don't want the bacteria box. That one is really bad. Just stay away from that one. So he went up to Windows Azure and walked through their experience of creating a new website, which gave him a way to have a catalog of products. He didn't have to build that whole mechanism. It was just provided to him on Azure. It also gave him a commerce engine. And so if his users go up to this website and say, you know, hey, yeah, I really like that candy cane box, even though it's $16, I want to add it to my shopping cart. And now I've got, oh, it looks like I'd already purchased the original box. And so if I check out here, I can go ahead and check out as the guest and go through a complete commerce experience. And this guy's, you know, not the sharpest tool in the box, but he at least knew that he wanted to use Windows Azure, but he wasn't going to be able to build a commerce engine himself. And so it turns out that actually this site took off really well, and he decided he wanted to create a Windows Store application to sell his shiny boxes as well. And so he didn't want to have to rebuild all of that infrastructure that he had on Azure just to build a local application that did essentially the same thing. And so he decided he was going to use the WebView control to help leverage what he had on the Azure site. So the Azure site provides him with a product catalog and a mechanism for using that. He didn't want to reconstruct that in his local application, so on Azure, he simply exports a JSON object that has all of the details about the products that he sells on the Azure site. And so his application consumes that JSON and displays it in this list view control. And now we get a really nice experience where you can purchase things simply by clicking on the screen. Or at least it would if my touch was working here. So let me actually kill that, and we'll try starting it up again. Shiny boxes. Oh, it's because I forgot to stop debugging it before I tried to start it again. My mistake. Yes, there we go. Now touch is working again. I don't know why it stopped. So I can interact with this entire list view control that's got all of his cool shiny boxes, and as I select them using a native experience in Windows, it's adding it to a checkout list. When I hit checkout, what's going to happen here is I'm in fact bringing up a web view control. So the purchase experience that you see, if I click next and ship to this address, and well, let's see, it's free shipping by air, that's fine. I'll do that and hit next. None of this code that's doing the commerce component, even though for all intents and purposes it looks like it's embedded in this application, is in fact running locally. It's running up on the Azure services, but appears to be part of this application. So he was very quickly able to take the benefit of what he got up on Azure and bake it into a local application using the WebView control. You can take a quick look at his content here. So this is the web view that he used for the cart. So again, it's the x-ms web view tag in HTML. And as you can see here, it's simply pointing at the cart that he has on the Azure site. It's really doing nothing more than that. Here it is. Here's the cart. In his JavaScript, what he's doing, as soon as I click checkout, he's walking through all of the items that he had in the list view control and calling out using the invoke script async call to the function that actually exists on the website, add product variant to cart. And so from his local application, he's simply calling invoke script to the Azure hosted web view control saying, add these particular items to the cart so that he can complete the checkout experience. It's just that simple. Okay, now I promise to talk to you more about local navigation. So let's get back to that. So the simple case is what we call navigation to the MS App Data Protocol. Just as a reminder, HTTP or HTTPS is going to be navigation out to content that's on the web. MS AppX Web is navigation to content that actually shipped in your package and was part of your application. And then this new one that we're introducing is MS App Data, which is navigation to the local app state directory. And so if you imagine you had an application and you've got, no matter what language the application is written in, if you have help content that's written in HTML, because that's what's simple for your help authors to do, you could download at any time a new version of that help file, drop it in your application state directory, and then just point the WebView control directly at that data, and it would just render and be updated at any time. In fact, that's so simple that that's not even the demo that I'm going to walk through today. I want to show you something that's actually quite a bit more sophisticated and quite a bit more powerful, and it's much more capable than just navigating to the local state directory. Clicker work. There we go. It's something that we call navigation to MS Local Stream. Think about it this way. In a browser or in a web view control, there's really only two things that you need to display the content. You need the base address where that content exists, and you need a stream of data to display. And we thought, what if we actually gave you a way to create those addresses and that content on the fly, regardless of what was actually on the disk or where it was located? And so we invented this mechanism that we call Navigate to Local Stream URI. It takes two parameters. It takes an initial URI, and then it takes a resolver. What that resolver is a callback to your own application that is going to create that stream. In the application that I'm going to show you, it's going to be an EPUB file that the resolver knows how to crack open, look at the HTML in that EPUB file, and then send that back to the web view for rendering. But it could be used really for anything. Imagine you had your own custom file format on the disk, an encrypted format perhaps, and you had your own local resolver that knew how to decrypt that that format and pass off valid HTML, CSS, and JavaScript to the WebView control. You could be in a situation where you're downloading content that is not in clear text, if you will, but rendered in a browser control that is in fact displaying HTML, CSS, and JavaScript without ever having it that way on disk. Let me show you what that looks like in an application. Here I've got an EPUB reader. Oh, let's go back to the demo. Here I've got a very simple EPUB reader that looks like, it doesn't look as good as many of the EPUB readers in the store, but it does have a distinctive. These saved books are, in fact, if I click on them, we can see the content being displayed in a WebView control. But these saved books are, in fact, not part of the application. Most of the ebook readers that you get on the store today come with a relatively complete set of books packaged in the application and don't give you a way of downloading and acquiring new versions of these books. But these five books are, in fact, located in this application's local state directory. So here's the EPUB books. They're all .EPUB files. They've not been cracked open on disk, but even though they haven't been cracked open, I'm able to display them in my application. And in fact, if I browse for more books, come on, there you go. Just going to one of the many sites out there that provides free EPUB books. This particular one is called bookshouldbefree.com. And let's say I wanted to read Call of the Wild. I could click on that and then scroll down. In fact, I've never done this one before, so this is brand new. Click on the ebook file, and immediately Call of the Wild appears in my application using HTML, CSS, and JavaScript that's been formatted using the region mechanism, so we get a really nice pagination and flow. Well, what happened there? If you recall, I talked to you earlier about this event that you can get that is about unviewable content. And so what happened when I clicked on that EPUB file link, this event was fired, the WebView unviewable content identified, and this function was called. And what it does is a very simple check. If I was really writing this application for the store, I would do something a little more sophisticated than just check the extension that was on the file. But we're assuming in this particular case that anything that I click on that is in fact labeled EPUB is a valid EPUB file. And then I'm going to call a function that's going to download that, and then I'm going to move forward with navigating that in my WebView control. What I'm doing here in the download EPUB file, I would like to point out something else that's kind of cool. You may have heard about or seen a talk on the new web HTTP APIs. So I'm using these. These are new APIs that are introduced in Windows 8.1 to make it very easy to use HTTP calls to do things like go and pull down this particular file. So what I'm doing is I'm using these calls to basically write this out to my local state directory and then fire it off to my other web view that is in fact rendering that in my local application. Let's see what that looks like. So again, I mentioned this particular call, navigate to local stream URI. It takes a URL and a resolver. We have a helper function called build local stream URI that really just takes a path and a tag that you assign to that given path and constructs a URI as your base address. And then it takes this resolver function. So let's take a look at this resolver function. Let's see. So here's the archive URI resolver as I've defined it in my application. It takes an archive file, so I'm giving it a path to that particular file that's in my state directory. And then I'm getting the paginator, and here's the core, the get content call. So in this particular function, I am going to use the .NET ZIP APIs to pull out and extract from that EPUB file, which if you weren't aware, is in fact just a zip archive under a different name. It's just a structured way of containing HTML, CSS, and JavaScript in a container file. So I can use the zip archive APIs to go ahead and extract out that initial URI that I want. And so I pull that into a random access stream and pass that stream back out as an input stream to my navigation call in the web view. As soon as I do that, now the web view has the two things it needs. It needs that base URI, and it needs that stream of data. This function just gave me that stream of data. Again, this is where you could do other things as well with this stream of data, like decrypt it on the fly if you needed to. And so that gets passed back to the web view and then displayed in this web view right here. Now, what's really cool about this is, in this example that I've showed you so far, it's doing it all within the local state directory. But again, as I said earlier, it really doesn't matter where this stream is coming from. As long as your application can produce a base address and a stream of data, the WebView is able to display it. So, for instance, you could have a database that's up in the cloud, and when you navigate to your WebView, it could be going out to the cloud, pulling out information out of the database, constructing valid HTML, CSS, and JavaScript on the fly, and sending that back to the WebView as a stream, and there's nothing local on the disk that's in fact backing that navigation at all. Let me illustrate that by going back to my desktop and navigating to the Project Gutenberg site, which is another site that provides a wealth of free EPUB books. Let me scroll down to recent books, and what do we got? Well, actually, let me go to most downloaded books. And I love Victor Hugo's Les Miserables, and they've got an EPUB file here, in fact, with images in it. And I open it. This is actually a relatively large file, because it's got these images in it. And again, even though this is now not in my local state directory, it's in fact, right now it's residing on disk in the internet temporary files cache, but it could be, again, a remote location, I'm able to display that in my application in the WebView control just that easily. It's just another stream of data. So how cool is that?